long time ago when the earth was green, and there was more kinds of animals than you'd ever seen. They'd run around free while the earth was being born, but the loveliest of them all was the unicorn.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is October 17th, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. I'm trying really hard not to smile so much because I'm looking at my guest, but I can't introduce her yet. Anyways, the title of today's podcast is Contrast-Induced Nephropathy, a Unicorn? And here she is, our guest skeptic, Dr. Lauren Westifer. She's a board-certified emergency physician at Bay State Medical Center and instructor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. She currently writes The Short Coat, which is a blog, and she's the co-founder of emergency medicine podcast, Foamcast. Welcome back to the SGEM, Lauren. It has been way too long.
It totally has, Ken, but here we are right now.
Here we are, and a lot has changed. I mean, not only in the technology, because we were just talking about how I've upgraded some of the recording software and some of the editing software, but you have been through some major life changes. One, you got married, met your partner. She's incredible. Two, you had a baby, met him, super dapper in his little bow ties, and you started a new job. You changed from being a resident to an attending. Wow.
And that right there explains exactly why it's been so long. Babies aren't exactly known for inducing efficiency, but I am so happy you approve of both of them. And you'd be so proud the baby has been sporting his Canadian hoser jacket all around town and people just eat up that little maple leaf on the back.
Oh, great. I'm glad he likes it so much. Well, we have a big double episode because we're going to do two papers. We're going to do one paper that you were an author on, and then a second paper on the same topic. So we're going to get started with a case. What's the case?
The case is a 64-year-old woman with type 2 diabetes. She presents to the emergency department with chest pain and shortness of breath. The ACS workup is negative, but she's Wells high and needs a CTA to rule out pulmonary embolism. Her GFR comes back at 50, and you're wondering if the contrast needed for the CT scan is going to cause acute kidney injury, and if so, should we do anything to mitigate causing an acute kidney injury?
Well, there has been a huge increase in the number of CT scans performed, with more than 75 million CT scans performed in the U.S., and this number is from 5 years ago. That was in 2013. I'm sure it's higher now. Some scans require intravenous contrast, while in other cases, it may improve imaging quality.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of ink spilled over this idea of contrast-induced nephropathy or post-contrast AKI. It came out of case reports and non-controlled studies, and historically, CT scans were done with this high osmolar contrast material. And these non-controlled studies or case series, they showed a rise in acute kidney injury, thought the idea that it induced contrast-induced nephropathy. However, now we're using this isoosmolar or low osmolar contrast, and we're also not seeing kidneys die as a result.
I just have pictures of kidneys falling over, like dying or something. Well, there's been multiple observational studies that have been published demonstrating that AKI in the modern era does not exist. It's almost like, Lauren, we're looking for a unicorn. And part of the difficulty with this topic is the inconsistent definition of contrast-induced nephropathy. A common definition is an increase in a creatinine level by 25% or an absolute increase of 0.3 to 0.5 milligrams per deciliter within 3 days.
Yeah, and these are all disease-oriented outcomes like change in laboratory values, not patient-oriented outcomes like death or need for dialysis. And it's not clear also exactly whether a patient really cares about their rise in creatinine.
Yeah, I do have patients with creatinine problems, and so they'll ask me what their creatinine is. But it's rare when I'm going to get a test like this that they say, hey, what's my creatinine? And do you think it's going to bump up 25%, doc?
Exactly.
No, that hasn't happened. So what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer?
Today, we're going to answer, is CT contrast associated with acute kidney injury?
And normally for the reference, I just put the first author's name, but you better read the second author on this paper too.
We're actually co-first authors, but Westifer is at the end of the alphabet, so it comes last.
Oh.
So it's Acock Westifer et al., acute kidney injury after computed tomography, a meta-analysis that was in Annals of Emergency Medicine, and it was published in January 2018.
All right, so let's go through the PICO. What was the population?
adult humans.
Yes, and the exclusion was pediatric patients, non-human studies, studies of contrast-enhanced procedures like coronary angiography, interventional studies, case reports, review articles, clinical guidelines, and other meta-analyses. What was the intervention?
Contrast-enhanced CT scans.
And what did you compare it to?
We compared it to non-contrast CT scans.
And let's go through the outcome. What was the primary outcome?
We looked at incidence of acute kidney injury.
And the secondary outcomes?
Mortality or need for renal replacement therapy like dialysis.
And now I don't even have to put, in quotations, the author's conclusions, air quotes, because the author, you, are going to give your conclusions.
Sure, Ken. So we found no significant differences in our principal study outcomes between patients receiving contrast-enhanced CT versus those who received a non-contrast CT scan. Given similar frequencies of acute kidney injury in patients receiving the non-contrast CT, other patient and illness level factors rather than the use of contrast material likely contribute to the development of acute kidney injury.
All right. Well, this was a systematic review of prognostic studies. So let's run through the seven questions for those. The prognostic question, is it clinically relevant to ED patients?
Yes, sir, it is.
The individual study patients were sufficiently homogeneous with respect to prognostic risk for outcome?
No, there were quite a different number of types of patients included.
The individual study assessment for the outcome used objective, reproducible, and unbiased criteria?
Sure did.
The individual study period of follow-up was sufficiently long enough and complete?
Not so sure about this one, unsure.
All right, the search for studies was detailed and exhaustive. That was your lit search.
It was exhausting, but it was also detailed and exhaustive.
The methodological qualities for primary studies were assessed for common forms of prognostic research bias.
Yes.
And the final question, the assessments of the study were reproducible.
Yes.
All right, let's run through your key results. There were a total of 28 studies that were included with over 100,000 patients. All of the studies were observational, with a majority being retrospective chart reviews. Of the 28 studies, 26 evaluated and defined AKI, or acute kidney injury. 13 measured the need for renal replacement therapy, and 9 quantified all-cause mortality. But what was the key result from your review?
Contrast-enhanced CT was not significantly associated with incidence of acute kidney injury.
And can you give us the odds ratio for the primary outcome, the incident of acute kidney injury?
Sure. The odds ratio was 0.94 and the confidence interval was 0.83 to 1.07.
And then you had two secondary outcomes. One was mortality.
And the odds ratio there was 1.0, confidence interval 0.73 to 1.36.
And the need for renal replacement therapy.
Odds ratio there was 0.83 with a confidence interval of 0.59 to 1.16.
All right, now I get to talk nerdy about your own study. So first of all, I should say congratulations on getting published in Annals. That's a big deal.
Thanks again. Appreciate it.
All right, so let's go through five nerdy questions. The first one is about the quality of the study. The systematic review only included observational studies, some retrospective and some prospective. I'm not saying garbage in and garbage out, but it does limit the strengths of the conclusions that can be drawn.
Absolutely. And this is an issue with meta-analyses is often people will put it at the top of the evidence pyramid. But really, I think of meta-analyses as sort of saying what's out there in the literature, not necessarily this is great evidence. You should follow this. So we would have loved to seen some randomized controlled trials, but it's historically been kind of hard to randomize someone who needs a scan for something like, I don't know, aortic dissection to a non-contrast scan. Might raise some red flags with the IRB. On the other hand, I think it's important to take a gander at the evidence that was used to say post-contrast AKI is a thing to begin with in the first place. And this was all case series and non-controlled studies, which is really even more like subpar, quote, evidence. I don't even know that it would be evidence to begin with.
I like how you identified that this whole pyramid and hierarchy of evidence needs to be looked at through a filter of, you know, what are we really doing with the evidence? And it's a bit artificial to put that systematic review meta-analysis at the top. It really depends on what ingredients you're putting into that systematic review.
Agreed.
But the second question is about publication bias. We know that publication bias, it exists, unlike maybe contrast-induced nephropathy. So it does exist, with positive studies being more likely to be published. Did you check for publication bias? And if so, what did you find?
Sure, we did. We did a funnel plot which you look to kind of see where the distribution of studies lie. And it was an equal distribution of studies when we sort of inspected it visually. We also performed in a statistical program, not by hand, the Harburg-Egger test of bias, and it indicated a low likelihood of publication bias.
Oh, your nerdiness has increased since last we talked. I love it. Okay, number three, selection bias. Because none of the studies were randomized, that can introduce selection bias. How could selection bias have been introduced into this systematic review meta-analysis, and what impact do you think it would have on the results?
I think that when you have a provider ordering a CT scan, there's obviously selection bias because sometimes you're ordering a CT scan and maybe you'd like to have contrast, but you can live without it. You're not looking for an aortic dissection. You're just looking for maybe enhancing, say, like a small bleed or looking for diverticulitis, and that's what your surgeons want. So sometimes providers may say, hey, the GFR looks to be pretty low. I can live without it. So I think that perhaps there may have been some selection bias there, and maybe providers just sort of scanned select people thinking, hey, I won't really hurt their kidneys anyways. So I think that's one way in which it could have been introduced here, and because they weren't randomized to receive it or not. And perhaps that would have made things look as though there was less acute kidney injury to begin with because they weren't scanning the high-risk patients with contrast material.
Well, we're speaking of bias, and that leads us into the fourth point, and that's about measurement bias. There were differing definitions of AKI in the studies and the timing of renal function measurement. Less than one in five studies reported renal function greater than 72 hours. How do you think that could have impacted the results?
Yeah, this was a frustrating one because a lot of it wasn't timed. They measured somewhere between 48 and 72 hours. And then the definitions were also so different. And we thought that both of these things could impact the outcome. With the differing definitions, the one using the 25% rise in creatinine definition, with this one, someone could go from a creatinine of 0.7 milligrams per deciliter. I think that's like almost 62 micromoles or whatever y'all use up there, to 0.875 milligrams per deciliter or 84.4 micromoles. That was an online calculator. I hope it's correct. But which both of those would be normal GFRs, but they would still meet the definition for this acute kidney injury. So it's a super conservative definition. And so we thought there might be some variation in incidence of AKI with this. We did a subgroup analysis. No major differences here, except for the 25% increase in creatinine alone as a definition was actually associated with less AKI in the contrast arm. And I think that this is probably because it was just more sensitive in both arms, may have been a statistical anomaly. Either way, we didn't see a major difference in groups. With the timing of follow-up, this could potentially overreport meaningful AKI if the creatinine just goes back to normal. And perhaps, you know, maybe the creatinine would increase after that point, although then I doubt it's related to the contrast at that point. We did a subgroup analysis again here, didn't find a difference in the groups measured pre-72 hours and post-72 hours.
Well, the fifth and final question gets into heterogeneity. And the heterogeneity for the primary outcome of AKI as measured by the I-squared metric was fairly high at around 65%, indicating moderate heterogeneity. Some would suggest these studies should not be combined due to the differences between the studies.
Sure, we definitely saw that and kind of talked about it when we were doing the analysis and figuring out exactly what to do and whether we should in fact publish it. We thought that this heterogeneity kind of made sense because a bunch of the studies weren't matched and they were relatively small. So we expected some statistical heterogeneity there. And because of this, we did yet another subgroup analysis that we specified a priori. And we hypothesized that the higher quality or matched studies would be more homogeneous. And when in fact we did this, voila, we examined those, the I squared of the matched studies was 0%. And still there was no association with AKI. So the heterogeneity there looked pretty good. And we thought those results still sort of stood. Also, the heterogeneity was low for the secondary outcomes, the mortality and need for dialysis.
All right. Those are the five nerdy questions. I'm not going to get you to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEMs. I think that would be a little funny. So I'll do that. We agree with your conclusions, Lauren. All right. How about an SGEM bottom line?
The SGEM bottom line is CT contrast is not associated with acute kidney injury.
All right, so let's move on to the second question, and this will get to the second paper. What's the second clinical question we're going to ask?
The second clinical question is, do intravenous sodium bicarbonate or sodium chloride with oral acetylcysteine or placebo prevent acute kidney injury and major adverse outcomes in high-risk patients undergoing angiography?
And to be clear, you were not on this paper?
I was not on this paper. This was in NEJM. That would be nice, but no.
Okay, so what's the reference?
Wiseboard, Gallagher et al., the PRESERVE trial group outcomes after angiography with sodium bicarbonate and acetylcysteine. This was NEJM 2018.
All right, let's run through its PICO. What was the population?
Patients with compromised renal function, and this they defined as a GFR of 15 to 45 or 45 to 60 if the patient was diabetic.
And there was a long list of exclusions, and I'll put a link to the supplementary index in the show notes. What was the intervention?
IV sodium bicarbonate or IV normal saline.
And the comparison?
Oral acetylcysteine, which is also known as NAC, and or placebo.
Yeah, and so this was a 2x2 type of study. Let's go through the outcomes. The primary outcome?
Composite of death and need for dialysis or a rise in creatinine greater than 50% in the 90 to 104 days post-angiography, which is essentially, did they have persistent impaired renal function?
And how about the secondary outcomes?
Contrast-associated AKI, which they defined as a greater than or equal to 25% increase in creatinine or 44 micromole per liter increase from baseline 3 to 5 days after the angiography. Also confirmed persistent kidney impairment, death, dialysis, hospitalization with acute coronary syndrome, heart failure, or stroke by 90 days, or admission to hospital within 90 days.
Okay, I'll read the author's conclusions this time. Quote, among patients at high risk for renal complications who were undergoing angiography, there was no benefit of intravenous sodium bicarb over intravenous sodium chloride or oral acetylcysteine over placebo for the prevention of death, need for dialysis, or persistent decline in kidney function at 90 days, or for the prevention of contrast-associated acute kidney injury, end of quote. So this was a randomized trial, so we have 11 questions to ask. The first question, did it focus on emergency patients?
Yes. Well, I mean, they were ones that got angiography, so they would be related to emergency, theoretically.
Did they adequately randomize them?
They sure did.
Did they conceal the randomization?
Yes, they did.
Did they do an intention to treat analysis?
They did.
Did they recruit consecutively?
Yes.
Were groups similar with prognostic factors?
Yes.
Were they unaware of group allocation?
Correct. They were unaware.
Were all groups treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
Was follow-up complete?
Not sure.
All patient important outcomes were considered?
Yep.
And the last question, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
It was, Ken.
All right, so let's run through the results. They had almost 5,000 patients included in the trial in this 2x2 factorial design. The average age was 70 years, with the vast majority, and what I mean by vast is 94% were men. The median GFR was 50, 80% had diabetes, and 90% of the procedures were coronary. So that gives you a picture of who they were working on. It was older men with a GFR of 50. Most of them had diabetes, and they were going for coronary procedures. What was the key result?
No difference in their primary composite outcome or acute kidney injury between sodium bicarbonate and normal saline or between N-acetylcysteine and placebo.
And for that primary outcome, which was a composite outcome of death, the need for dialysis, or persistent increase of at least 50% from baseline in the serum creatinine level at 90 days, the difference was?
There wasn't really a difference between groups. It was about 4.5% in all groups.
And how about all those secondary outcomes? We're not going to reread them, but were there differences there?
Nope, there were no difference in any of those secondary outcomes.
All right, so we're going to talk nerdy again, and we've got 5 points. I'm going to start off with selection bias and external validity. The population in this study was military veterans with stage 3 or 4 kidney disease, whom 94% were male, 80% had diabetes, and most, 90%, were getting contrast-enhanced CTs of their coronaries. This is a fairly select group and may limit the external validity to women, those without diabetes, and those with getting other forms of contrast-enhanced CTs.
There was also a little bit of a difference in the intervention. So they were randomized to the sodium bicarbonate or the normal saline, or 0.9%. But the timing of initiation of the fluids, the duration, and then how quickly those fluids were administered did vary between all of those sites.
One of the things I usually bring up with composite outcomes is it was a composite outcome, and that makes a bigger target. But they didn't find a difference between the four groups. A common concern always is that not all outcomes included in the composite are considered equally important. Persistent impairment in kidney function is not clinically equal to death or even the need for hemodialysis. However, they did report each component of the composite outcome, and there was no difference between any of those outcomes either.
The next is that the trial was stopped early. The trial was, I think, sponsored by the Department of Veteran Affairs, things like that. And they stopped it early at a final interim analysis because they just didn't see much of a difference. They also included only 5,177, which was just under 70% of the patients, minus those with missing creatinine levels, which was between 4% and 9%. Which this is a pretty big threat to the validity of this trial because it didn't reach its target population of enrollment. You have talked about this previously on other episodes of the Skeptic's Guide about stopping trials early.
And the fifth and final point was about confounders. The primary endpoint was assessed at 90 days. Therefore, the effect of the intervention may be confounded by other treatments in between when the CT scan was done and the composite outcome at 3 months. This time, Lauren, you can comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
We agree with the author's conclusions.
All right, what's the SGEM bottom line then?
The risk of acute kidney injury from CT contrast is not as high as it was thought to be and possibly may not even exist. The risk of missed or delayed diagnosis probably outweighs any from the exposure in a patient who does actually require a contrast CT study.
Can you resolve the case that we presented?
The patient has the CTPA done without receiving any prophylactic bicarbonate or NAC, and no pulmonary embolism was identified. There was a small suspected pneumonia, but requires clinical correlation.
So how are you going to apply these two studies clinically?
If a patient needs a contrast-enhanced CT scan, then I'm going to get the CT scan even in a high-risk patient.
And what do you tell your patient?
There's no sign of heart attack on your test or a blood clot on the CT scan. We did pick up a possible early pneumonia on the CT scan, and I've written you a prescription for antibiotics. We'll have you follow up with your primary care physician and come back to the emergency department if you develop a rash, increasing shortness of breath, have worsened chest pain, or if you're worried for any reason.
All right, it's time for the Keener Contest, and last week's winner was Paul Eller, a PGY1 from UCSF EM residency. Paul knew that ketamine is an NMDA receptor antagonist. What's the question this week?
The tusk of what animal was sometimes sold as a unicorn horn?
Oh, when they were looking for unicorns, but they didn't find any unicorns. Sort of like CIN. Okay. Well, if you know the answer, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. There are multiple other FOMED resources on this issue of acute kidney injury, and I'll list those in the show notes. But Lauren, I wanted to thank you for taking away from your busy schedule and coming back on the SGEM.
Ken, it is always my pleasure.
So I'm always asking people to give a good, like, you know, tagline voice. And I was saying, what can I get? You know, and you're an attending now, so you might have an attending voice, but you also might have a mom voice. So you pick, read the tagline.
They're the same voice. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Hey, are you even listening to me?
Talk to everyone next week. You're never going to see no you.